Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by RockAuto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
And hello and welcome to MotorWeek podcast number 65. I am John Davis, and around our unusually shaped table here in Studio C at MotorWeek headquarters is our producer, Brian Roberts.
Hello.
Our over-the-edge reporter, Stephen Chupnik.
Hey, hey.
Our associate producer and chief of road test honcho, Ben Davis.
Good to be here for a lucky 65.
And it is our 65th, and we were expecting a little celebration here this afternoon, and so we're delighted that you had a chance to join us, because it is kind of a special show. Mm-hmm. Besides all the things that we'll get to, like our MotorWeek mailbag later in this podcast, we're fresh back, Brian Roberts and I are, from the 2012 North American International Auto Show, the big show in Detroit. There were 5,000-plus automotive journalists from around the world. Stephen Chupnik and Ben have been following it on the Internet. And, gentlemen, I'm going to open up the discussion with a couple of brief comments, then kind of let's go at some of the new models that were seen there. You could characterize this show in a couple of ways. First, you could say, well, most products, most of the new cars we saw and concepts, they were smaller. They were more fuel efficient, but they were also great looking. Mm-hmm. Really good-looking cars. And another way to look at it, as we all know that Detroit's been coming back, and it was a great year for Ford, Chrysler, and GM, and they're all fielding new four-door sedans that look very appealing. And this is after all two decades or more of basically the American family turning to primarily Toyota, Honda, and other Asian imports for bread-and-butter midsize and compact cars. We saw the new Ford Fusion, a very, very handsome midsize 2013 product. We've already know the Chevy Malibu is coming with a new car. Dodge Dart over at the Chrysler mm-hmm. Group, bringing back an old name and putting on a thoroughly modern sedan. And go up a little bit in price, the Cadillac ATS, a compact Cadillac that has all the lightweight technology to really be go toe-to-toe with the best from Europe. With that said, Brian, why don't you jump in here? What are some of the vehicles you thought were real standouts?
Well, I think you mentioned one of them, and that was the 2013 Ford Fusion. It was just absolutely stunning. You know, it goes on sale this fall, and it, you know, they're trying to, you know, Ford is trying to take down the Camry and the Accord. And I think this vehicle, I mean, it looks like an Aston Martin from the front end.
Right.
It is simply stunning, and I think if, you know, if they can price it right, it'll do real well.
They sold 250,000 almost of the old model
mm-hmm,
in
yeah.
last year, so you know it's got good name recognition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the upscale, the interior was very upscale and inviting. It features a lot of technology inside, you know, with blind spot monitoring and stuff like that. So I think it's going to do real well.
How about also the hybrid model with a
47
mile yeah. per gallon city rating?
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
That's almost at the Prius level,
mm-hmm.
and you're talking about a car that's roughly inside. I don't know, 50% bigger probably.
Mm-hmm. Also, the Dodge Dart. I mean, the new compact sedan, I thought, which is based on the Alfa Romeo Giulietta.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Very, very nice looking. In fact, I think they said it'll eventually get a 9-speed transmission.
Yeah, the Europeans are pushing these 8 and 9 speeds. And actually, Chrysler there is in the lead since they've already got an 8-speed in their 300.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, what about you? You were monitoring things from back here. What struck you at the show?
I really like the looks of the Chevy Code 130R.
Cool.
Yeah.
Why don't you explain what that and the 140S are all about?
Well, looking at it on the internet, the first thing I thought of was it looks just like a 1 Series BMW almost.
And it really does. Now, what to give you some background, what Chevrolet has done is they've turned their designers loose and said, we'd like you to do a couple of concepts that the young buyer, meaning under 30, the folks that buy Scions, so more, you know, what would they like to see from Chevrolet? What might they be interested in? And they're more apt to buy coupes than almost any other age group. So they did these two concepts, the Code 130R that Ben was talking about, which does look a lot like kind of a 1 Series. And they also did a super swoopy one called the 140S. It looks more like, a Mitsubishi Eclipse stylized.
Yeah,
but with that said, go ahead.
Yeah, with the 130R, you got rear-wheel drive. It looks like they've brought some sort of it's almost a Corvette badge, but not really. Right. It looks very similar. There are differences, though, and that's kind of neat, too. It just looked very aggressive. The couple other things that I saw that I liked were the I liked the Buick Encore was kind of neat looking.
The Encore.
I don't know if I liked it, but it caught my eye.
Do you realize that that's based on the Sonic
platform? Yeah.
It will be one of the smallest crossovers you can buy. It's just a couple of inches longer than the Countryman.
With still a fair amount of cargo room in it.
And I hear it's got a noise-canceling system?
Yep. Active noise canceling.
That's pretty incredible.
1.4 liter turbo, same engine that's in the Sonic.
It's a little stubby looking in person, but I have to admit I was drawn to it. I owned a Buick Enclave, and we were expecting a shrunken version of the Enclave. What we got was something that was really shrunken, like a I couldn't get over how small it was. Yet, when you got in the front seat, it had plenty of room. I'm not so sure the second seat was quite as roomy. But if you look at the profile, it's all side doors and not much behind it.
Lexus LFLC.
Stunning. Great.
Wow.
An advanced hybrid that's going to show us a lot of the styling cues that Lexus may use.
Yeah, they're saying that spindle grill is going to carry over. It's going to be their family grill.
Yeah, they're using, I guess, one version on the GS already, but not as stylized as that was. But that was clearly one of the styling.
Yeah, looked pretty production ready, actually.
Yeah, my wife saw that. I was showing her some pictures from it, and she fell in love with it. I just had to tell her that
I know what I pay you, and forget it. What else caught your eye, Stephen?
I have to say the Cadillac ATS. I guess I will go the Dodge Dart first, just because my dad had a Dodge Dart. And growing
up, you have good memories?
I have really good memories. It was a 1969 Dodge Dart, and he had that till I was probably 11 or 12.
Really?
And so he had it, let's just say, a little over 30 years. And
well, starting for under $16,000, you can get this one.
A lot more detail on the front end than we're used to seeing Chrysler products. It's a very nicely done car.
But the,
nice
the Cadillac ATS, not only does it look good, and it looks like it feels good too. But they are using this new infotainment system called the Q, which is – it's basically more of a user entertainment system.
Explain that. Explain what you mean by that, because they were spending a lot of time talking about that.
This system goes up to 10 mobile devices, can connect up to 10 mobile devices at one time. Not only that, but I get into some of these cars, and there are so many buttons and so many little gadgets and everything that I don't even know what to touch first. Mm-hmm. There are four buttons. That's it. Four buttons. And you look at it and you're like, what do you do? It's simple. Play.
It's very intuitive.
Or connect or anything. Everything else is done by voice. And even if you don't have a smartphone, everything can be connected through your phone and through the
touch screen. OnStar, correct?
Right. And through OnStar is even separate. It is connected through OnStar, but OnStar is a separate function.
Now, I imagine that they probably made a big deal of that at the Consumer Electronics Show as well.
They did. However, it was more design. They wanted to really show it off at Detroit. The Q was released at CES in the Consumer Electronics Show, but then the big reveal was with the ATS.
Anything else strike your eye?
The Pathfinder.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
And I was not underimpressed, but I was. It didn't look like a regular Pathfinder. It was more curvy and
when you saw it, you said, wow. I mean, I have to tell you, in person.
I didn't see it in person,
In person, you're walking by and you stopped because it looked that different and looked that much more upscale.
It really did. It didn't look like a Nissan, more Infiniti-ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the online photos, it looked a lot like it had similar cues from the Durango almost, maybe.
Mm-hmm. It did sort
in that line of swoopiness.
Speaking of that, and let's get off the subject a second, there was a concept that was rolled out by Chrysler, and nobody knew it was coming. There was no press release. Apparently, Sergio decided that they wanted to bring it to the show at the last minute, and it's called the Chrysler 700C, and it is a design study on what the next minivan could look like. Everyone's basically – it's hard to describe it except that it has these swept back windows. It makes it look like the front area where the drivers are is completely separate from behind where the kids might be riding. Has this very curved side glass, door latches that streak up the side from front door to back, still has sliding doors, a longer hood, more crossover than minivan. They've said flat out, we're not building this, but they wanted to throw it out there because the new generation Caravan and Town and Country are on the way, and they're looking for ideas. So it was a pretty interesting-looking vehicle. It provoked a lot of interest, and there was absolutely no publicity about it.
Well, the Pathfinder is three rows now, and and I, you know, looking at it, even with the rear, the third row would be just for child. That, at least that's what it looked like. It looked like a smaller third row, but a little bit more room than there was in the previous model.
As a big fan of the old NSX.
Oh, yeah.
What can you tell me about this new one? Because at first glance, I'm a little disappointed.
Are you really? Because I thought it was quite spectacular in person. They've toned down the shield grill on all the – they had a new sedan, the ILX, and they had the second generation of the RDX. Both of those toned down a little bit, made a little more elegant, and out rolls this NSX concept, which in this form was a hybrid.
Eco-friendly supercar.
They're talking, you know, 3 years from now it'll be on the market, all-wheel drive, still mid-engine V6, but with a hybrid powertrain.
Built in the U.S., too.
Built in the U.S., developed here. I was blown away by it. I thought, as interesting as the Lexus concept was, I thought this car was absolutely spectacular looking. It was gorgeous. And that was in silver, and I didn't think necessarily that showed it off the best. But, Brian, you jump in because you saw it in person,
too. Yeah, I was going to say, I thought it was I can't wait to get behind the wheel.
You talk about exotic. Yeah. You know, and if they manage to bring it in for an affordable price like the last NSX, well, affordable is relative. But well under six figures, it should go like gangbusters.
What they said at their press conference was, quote, the Acura, it will provide an all-wheel drive system that will provide supercar acceleration while offering outstanding efficiency.
It was beautiful.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And so we can only hope. We've been waiting for the NSX for a long time. And I frankly think the reason they've decided to build it is because they need something to get people interested in the Acura nameplate again.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up the Honda Accord coupe, which was pretty close to production.
And the new one, the new car will be out next fall.
Yeah, I thought it was – I did think it was a pretty conservative approach to the design. Yeah. So
it was better.
Yeah.
You know, it was more striking.
But with competing with cars like the Fusion and Sonata, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I you know, we have a new Camry, we've got a new Accord coming along, and we look at all this really good-looking high-tech hardware, and you sort of wonder if these two big import brands are going to get it together this go-around or whether it's going to take them a few more years. Well, I guess that sort of exhausts most of some of the high points. There were many other high points about the Detroit North American International Auto Show. We shouldn't leave this without mentioning the 19th annual North American Car and Truck of the Year Awards were presented, and Motor Week is delighted to be represented on that jury of 50 that select these. And this year, the winner for the truck was not a terribly big surprise since it's been winning about everything else, and no, it's not really a truck, but the Land Rover Range Rover Evoque compact crossover. But there was quite a bit of competition for the car award, and the winner there was the Hyundai Elantra, largely because I think of its great looks, very big interior for its size.
40
miles. And the fact it's 40 miles per gallon highway right out of the box without paying for any special packages like you have to do at some other brands. And they did a great job.
I think it was well-deserved that they won Car of the Year.
There's another car that has piqued our interest here, and we recently have been testing it, and that is the first of Mazda's SkyActiv technology cars. SkyActiv is Mazda's term for a whole car approach that will get the kind of the fuel economy that's close or as good as a hybrid without basically doing a hybrid. So they're looking at gas, diesel engines, their transmissions, how the body is shaped, all sorts of aerodynamics, and they've done. They took their Mazda 3 and did a minor redo and added as much of the SkyActiv technology to it as possible, primarily the drivetrain. And we've just finished testing it. And Ben, as our chief guy behind the wheels. What did you think of the Sky Active Mazda 3?
At first get-in, I was impressed with the way that the steering wheel communicated feedback to me just in casual driving, which is kind of – I wouldn't want to say it's lost in this whole electronic economic steering systems lately. But as a driver, it's a great daily car. On the track, you got plenty of feedback through the wheel going through the cones and stuff. Pretty well done. Seemed pretty quiet inside. Well done piece for the class.
I was surprised. I mean, they did almost by adding direct injection, a high compression ratio, and this is not even the full boat. They pushed fuel economy up by well over 20% compared to the non-Sky Active.
It's 40 miles on the highway, isn't it?
It's a 40 mile per gallon car too, and I believe the highway rating before was either 32 or 33, and with no loss of that driving enjoyment that Mazdas normally provide.
It seems planted.
Very impressive car, and we can't wait to see the full treatment on some of their other new products. The CX-5, their new compact crossover, will have pretty much the full Sky Active treatment, and it'll even be getting the diesel. Stephen Chupnik, you're on the spot here.
Yes.
You just said you're in the process of doing a fascinating segment as we're recording this. In this country, you turn 16, everybody sort of much feels it's their right to get a driver's license. You go take a couple of tests, and you pretty much got it. It's not that way in the rest of the world, and you can prove it firsthand. Tell us what you've been up to.
Well, about a month ago, I came back from Finland, where it is Europe, but the European – I guess, feel of driving, they don't look at it. They take safety, just like Sweden, they're, you know, Scandinavia, but safety and the overall driving feel is the most important. And
that's in getting
your license.
That's the primary thing.
That is the primary thing is safety, safety, safety. And, it's not until 18, it's a countrywide process where here in the States, each state delegates what the rules are.
But how about training? I mean, here you can pretty much take some driver's ed courses.
Driver's ed, you get a booklet. Right. That's it. Here it's you still go through your schooling. You get your provisional at 18.
Mm-hmm.
From there, the next 2 years is one of the hardest and stringent teaching and actual driving courses that you will ever have in your entire life.
You went through it, so give us an example.
I went through it. There's night driving, which you can do real driving, or you have a simulator, which is as real as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't do as well on that one. then there's what they really feel is the most important, is a slippery road course and an icy road course. They have four seasons there, and in the winter – there's snow, there's ice, and
everywhere,
and you just don't know where it's coming. I went through the course, and it's scary every time. There's an instructor in the car with you at all times, and you go through courses, and they teach you how to spin out.
Mm-hmm.
Really know the feel of the car.
Control.
Really know what happens if there's a moose that comes out in the middle of the street, because that does happen.
Sure. Did you pass?
do we want to know?
I think we do.
Let's just say that I got home safe. I did not pass.
Tell me this, though. You told me something interesting, and I assume this is Finland alone, that once you get your license, you don't ever have to go back and be retested?
Well,
is that correct?
It's not that you don't have to be retested. At 20 or in the two-year process after, you know, whatever process it takes, you can get as long as you want, but it's a minimum of two-year process.
Mm-hmm.
But at that license, it's a permanent license until you're age 70.
Wow.
Unless there's some medical condition that your doctor says you need
that,
to.
That surprised me when you told me that.
Yeah. It's a good picture. That's what I'm saying.
It's an interesting segment. It's in process, and I can't wait to see it. And I think it's going to provoke a lot of interest among our viewers. Okay, we've been waxing on famously about all the stuff we're doing. Let's actually get to a couple of the things that you out there have been listening to podcasts have sent in. We're going to be talking about, in our lightning round, a subject that I think really has got a lot of people guessing about the future of the auto industry. So here goes. We have 2 minutes, and at the end of that 2 minutes, Michelle Parker, our producer, is going to hit the bell, and we'll have to hush up. So here you go, guys. 2011 saw a 10% increase in sales of new cars and trucks, with 12.7 million sold. Well, that's great news for automakers. What does that mean for consumers? Are deals and discounts going to disappear, or will aggressive marketing from rebounding Japanese automakers keep the competition fierce? Who would like to start?
Go ahead. Well, I'd like to start. I think the aggressive marketing will continue, and there will be incentives because car manufacturers want to sell more vehicles. So competition drives that, and I think consumers will respond.
Generally speaking, they're looking for upwards of more than a million additional sales in 2012. So we're talking about knocking on the door 14 million. So to get there, they're going to have to be some deals. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to see $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, and $6,000. You're going to see $1,000, maybe $1,500. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be largely because, this is the question asked, the Japanese automakers particularly will be clamoring to get some of their market share back. At the same time, we talked about resurging Ford, GM, and Chrysler. You've got Hyundai and Kia over there racking up sales in record numbers. And then you got everybody else. I mean, almost everybody you looked at the end of the year had record sales.
Yeah, I agree with Brian. There's always going to be that incentive for someone to go buy a new car, or which I mean, at least for me, I'll tell you, that was the best. We look for the best deal. Who was giving the best discount? Other than which car we wanted, but I mean, that's really what we looked at, and I think that's always going to happen.
Ben, you have an impression?
That's one of them for the yeah. Hmm. I don't know about that.
Well, Ben is our resident taking something from the grave and restoring it, and I'm not sure. Have you ever owned a new car?
All I'm looking at is that's going to be a lot of nice used cars on the market for Benny D.
Oh, that was a good one. It's pretty clear, though, that with all the new product coming out, there's going to be more variety. And I think it'll be a very good year for the automaker. Mm-hmm. And if you are a customer, you're going to have to basically shop around a little, but you'll probably do just fine.
Nice selection out there.
Absolutely. Okay, now our mailbag question. Here we go. I'm in the market, and Benny, I'm going to start with you on this one.
Okay.
I'm in the market for, and who did this come from? Our MotorWeek mailbag.
Still my car.
From Josh. Sorry, Josh. I'm in the mailbag for a new car, and I can spend a maximum of $23,000. What is the most fun-to-drive performance car I can buy in that price range? Ben.
All right. All right, Josh, I'm going to assume this is a new-to-you car instead of a brand-new car. Well, let's just say it is a brand-new car. I would look at maybe Genesis Coupe. I would try to see if I could get myself into a base Mustang at that price. And if it's just a new-to-you car, that really opens up a much broader spectrum. I mean, for that money, I would try to go maybe a Lancer Evo. Nah, you probably couldn't touch one of those.
But you could probably also get a used 3 Series, too.
Or you could get a used V8 Mustang, 4.6, not a 5.0, but plenty of mods for that.
What's a Jetta GLI cost? Is that 25?
I'm glad
almost
you asked
25,
that.
Isn't
That's,
it?
No, it's actually, it's 24.
All right, I would say.
That was going to be my choice.
I was going to say Jetta GLI.
Why don't you explain why? Because a lot of people haven't been, the Jetta. The Jetta now made in Mexico. It's been Americanized. A lot of people have complained, but the Jetta GLI adds an independent rear suspension.
It's very sporty. Yeah, much better to drive. I mean, just the whole very athletic, and take it on a back road, and just have a ball.
That car was a lot of fun to drive,
I have to admit. And we also talked already about one car that could be put in that category if you want something a little more reasonable, not a little bit less expensive, and that's the Mazda 3. And there's things like the Rio from Kia. Any suggestions, Stephen?
Keeping it with Kia, the Forte Coupe.
Very good choice.
I wouldn't say it's the most luxurious car, but
it's a performance car, though, either.
Performance car, but it definitely, if you want just the looks of it, mm-hmm. it definitely looks like it, you know, you could have a performance car.
I go along with Brian, though. GLI Jetta. I think that's your Josh. That might be your best pick. But
now, if
don't forget though, the Mustang. Ben mentioned Mustang and also Camaro. Standard car's got a 300 plus horsepower V6, no slouch.
I was going to say, if we add another zero to that maximum spending, we could say a Ferrari 458 Italia, maybe.
Okay.
But if I use the market, Josh, try out the 350 Zs. So you can pick those
idea.
Up pretty cheap, and that's a handful.
And as you can see, our round table today was not round. I'm not sure what shape this table's in. Anyway, it was quite a handful here. And thanks very much for joining us for our Motor Week podcast number 65. We had a great time being with you. I want to thank our audio engineer, Jim Bigwood, who always makes sure that we come through loud and clear, our podcast creator, Bob Mixter, and our producer, Michelle Parker, the lady with the bell. And we hope you'll join us for more Motor Week podcasts down the line and watch Motor Week every week on public television stations and Velocity.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. Motor Week is made possible by RockAuto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at MotorWeek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.